Spirituality Challenged is a podcast recorded on Canadian Treaty 1 territory, and that the land on which we gather is the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe, Cree, Oji-Cree, Dakota, and Dene people, and the homeland of the Métis Nation. We acknowledge that our water is sourced from Shoal Lake 41st Nation, which is located on Treaty 3 territory. Spirituality Challenged respects the spirit and intent of treaties and treaty making and are open to future partnerships with First Nations, Inuit, and Métis people in the spirit of truth, reconciliation, and collaboration. Hello, dear listener. What started out as an attempt to speak truth to power has led me to a metaphorical hike through the mountain of a popular meme that circles the religious right. Along the journey, I've discovered a disturbing, fear-based, but familiar code, which I first came across on Matt Walsh's X feed shortly after January 6th, 2021. The words in this meme go something like this. Be a rebel. Get married. Start a family. Love Jesus. Teach your kids to think for themselves. Buy land. Turn off the news. And refuse to live in fear. Last week, we discussed the part of being a rebel when it comes to getting married and the historic origins of marriage. Today, we're going to talk about the kinds of marriages that are acceptable in this evangelical code. Welcome to Spirituality Challenge, dear listener. I am your host, Aaron Parsons. On this podcast, we uncover the rarely discussed history and expose sources behind controversial Christian ideologies while uncovering hidden intentions behind the religious right. We try to cover as much ground within an hour on one topic in each episode, so sit back, relax, and prepare to be challenged. So let's say you're at a party, and you meet somebody new for the first time. What would be the first thing that you think of when they bring up a conversation about being unequally yoked? When I was looking for a date in the church, I was given the whole unequally yoked lecture in my years of becoming zealous for God between 2004 and 2010. Whenever we had Christian, what we call, socials, where believers would gather and they would hang out and talk and eat pizza and whatnot in my young adult years. This lecture was always given to me when I talked about time I spent with someone who isn't a Christian, and it was also put on blast on me from one of my closest friends whenever I had a crush on someone as a young adult that was even within our group. And actually, in the case of infatuation, being unequally yoked was thrown in my face as if I was playing with fire. Eventually, I quickly picked up on what the phrase actually meant during Bible school. Most people hearing this statement, even today, probably asked when hearing this really odd statement, being unequally yoked? What the hell does that even mean? And that's just one part of the problem with that statement. Being unequally yoked isn't a term that normal people use at all. No one just casually talks about people being yoked in a job, while gathering at the park to draw or exercise, or while casually dining or enjoying a concert. The person who introduces the idea of being equally or unequally yoked at parties, such as the ones that I usually attend, man, they definitely wouldn't be the life of the party at all. The language of being unequally yoked is drawn verbatim from the New International Version of the Bible from 2 Corinthians 6:14, or as Trump calls it, 2 Corinthians 6:14. Do not be yoked together with non-believers, for what do righteousness and wickedness have in common? What fellowship can light have with darkness? The meaning of the passage seems pretty straightforward to certain groups. The passage is so commonly pushed in churches to the point where for many evangelical Christians, it becomes a churchy bumper sticker catchphrase. The language seems so normal inside evangelical circles, and if someone outside the church asks, "What is this unequally yoked stuff all about?" People within the group will just say, "Oh, I'm just saying, don't be unequally yoked." The reasons those outside the church can't make sense of this particular statement is because it's a metaphor that is usually taught only within the four walls of the church building. So the idea of being unequally yoked is a farmer's metaphor. Now you need to stick with me here for a second because this is going to go pretty deep. The metaphor parallels a team of Christians to a team of oxen pulling a wagon together or tilling a field. If the oxen on the farm are not equally matched, or if one is stronger or faster than the other, the oxen won't work together at all. The work the oxen perform together will yield unequal results. To ensure that the farmer gets good results when dealing with crops, the yoke of oxen have to be what's called equally yoked. So it's a farmer term. Equally yoked means equally matched. And in some translations of the Bible, that metaphor is removed altogether, so the quiet part is amplified. The New Revised Standard Edition of the Bible puts out 2 Corinthians 6:14 like this: "Don't be mismatched with unbelievers." There we go. Metaphor removed. There's your answer. Get it? Got it? Good. Let's end the episode here. But actually, there is more to it than that. So we're going to go a little deeper. The message of not being mismatched with unbelievers is directed to evangelical Christians trying to live a life that is right with God. Evangelicals are always told that they need to be paired up with other Christians, otherwise they will be mismatched and won't be able to do what God wants them to do. Non-Christians are considered disruptors of a Christian spirituality. The passage indicates that a non-Christian, quote-unquote matched with a Christian, will cause the Christian to stumble in their faith. Let me just say that one more time. The passage implies that a non-Christian who is paired up with a Christian, whether it's in marriage or a work relationship, will cause the Christian, not the non-Christian, not the one on the outside, but the Christian, to stumble in their faith. The idea of being unequally yoked does more than just encourage separation between Christians and non-believers. This idea has a coded social purpose of control, which has resulted in long-term traumatic effects to certain groups of people, especially married couples who eventually experience divorce. When you look at what the Bible is really saying in 2 Corinthians, you see that the Apostle Paul discusses the Christian life in exclusive binary either-or terms. It's black and white. So first, Paul says that the world is divided into believers and non-believers in Jesus Christ. You're either a Christian or you're not. Second, association with people who do not believe in God can only cause problems in a Christian's life. And when this happens, according to the Apostle Paul, there is no learning, there is no growth, and there is no understanding or deepening of faith. Mixing Christians and non-Christians is the problem that needs to be solved, according to Paul, in order for Christians to be right with God and to connect with Him in a personal relationship. Third, Paul says that Christians are righteous and non-believers are wicked or lawless. To Paul, Christians live in the light and non-believers dwell in the darkness. Again, black and white, godless or not, right or wrong, good or bad. There's no gray areas, there's just polar opposites. There's no agnostic, there's only Christian or atheist. The language of being equally yoked paints the world in complete oppositional terms. It paints relationships as if quote-unquote Christian relationships with non-believers is only an us versus them kind of relationship. Social existence is portrayed as a zero-sum game. That is what the Apostle Paul is communicating right there on the surface of the Bible when it talks about being unequally yoked or mismatched. It's a brutal passage, and throwing it into discourse makes worse any discussion about a shared social life, whether you're building community, whether you're trying to resolve differences with one another, whether you're a Christian parent that signed up their kids in soccer and you talk to another parent who's a non-believer and yet their kids are on the same team. You get what I'm saying. Many people have experienced the brutality of this kind of communication on the receiving end of this message, including myself and my spouse. They've experienced this when being told, just because you're Catholic, you aren't the right kind of Christian, or just because you go to a United Church and your spouse goes to a Pentecostal church, you aren't the right kind of Christians that are supposed to be together. They've experienced this when a friend they used to go drinking with becomes a Christian and breaks off a friendship because the alcoholism causes the Christian to be unequally yoked. They've experienced this when a couple dates, one becomes a Christian, and their plans to get married are destroyed because the two of them can't work out their beliefs. And I'll bet some of you dear listeners of this podcast who used to go to church were even told not to be with other family members who weren't Christians because they would be a spiritual threat to their walk with God that they had before leaving the church. And worst of all, Christians who ask questions or who challenge church ideas are thrown out for becoming unequally yoked, quote unquote, with the church community itself because they choose to think for themselves and resist conformity. The deconstructed Christian is thrown out while they mean well, and then they start missing their community and they start having a hard time discussing certain topics with the people that they once had fellowship with. The idea of being unequally yoked in the rebel code telling people to get married also signals other kinds of us versus them language. The statement has a long history of being used in racial white discourse. That's right, it is also a racist kind of code. The statement was used to legitimize many racist policies and practices, even in government. To white people, a society couldn't function properly if different races were equally yoked together. This kind of language covered everything from equal rights or equal access to certain things. The idea of being unequally yoked is still being used as a discouragement of interracial marriages, especially in the southern US states. The idea here is that certain races were to remain separate to keep a certain social order. The language of light and dark was used literally to support segregation. You know, white and black people can't be reproducing together. The language isn't used explicitly like this today in other places, given how far we've progressed, but the meaning is still implied in certain communities, especially isolated rural communities, particularly white ones. Even with a softened racism, that doesn't make the argument on the basis of skin color or biology. There is a use of cultural language to present the idea that deep cultural division can't be bridged together. The communication in this idea discourages the blending of certain ethnic ideologies because there are differences that just won't be compatible. When told how offensive it is for a couple with diverse characteristics to get married, people pushing the idea of unequally yoked always clap back and say, "But it's not about race, it's about cultures." Yeah, okay there, boomer. The fact is that the idea still lives on, and the gross-coded language encouraging division is the elephant in the room that you want to keep hidden. When thinking back on the code to get married, the unequally yoked doctrine, it goes even beyond the commitment from one person to another. The idea is used to render any kind of group that is disliked by powerful, influential people as inferior or unequal by definition. A perfect example of this is that Christians should not be yoked with members of the LGBTQA+ community. So don't attend a public disco with them if you live in Vancouver. In sexuality, the two groups are mismatched because one group is all about the heteronuclear family while the other believers are all about diverse community and other forms. To associate with the LGBTQA+ community, according to the Apostle Paul, as evangelicals will probably argue, is that you're basically having deep relationships with people in this group, and it's equivalent to having sex. And that is a threat to the spiritual well-being of evangelicals who put high importance on the family, which I'll be covering in another episode. The idea is also used against couples where a man marries a woman who has more than one sexual partner. According to evangelicals, the man is unequally yoked with a woman because she has been quote-unquote yoked with other men in the past and has given up her yokedness, aka her sexual purity. It's used to enforce sexual order in the church, not only to discourage premarital sex or orgies, but to keep Christians and non-Christians from having sex with each other even if they're married. The unequally yoked idea also has an objective to preserve division in shared societies, where the most powerful, corrupt political groups can legitimize Christian nationalism. American Christians believe that a secular government cannot associate with a country that has been quote-unquote founded with Judeo-Christian values. And by the way, America was not founded on Christian values, but that's a whole other discussion. Christian nationalists believe that Christians and non-Christians cannot rule together or pass laws together in government. They believe that the values can be unequally yoked, and if both groups govern together, the empire known as the USA, or possibly even Canada, will collapse. To Christian nationalists, only a Christian society can flourish. This thinking is so scary, especially when it goes beyond individual relationships. I even dare to go as far to say, from my own experience, that being unequally yoked is also used in some cases to create division between disabled and non-disabled folks getting married to each other or working in certain ministries together. The obvious reasoning is that the oxen won't produce any godly results because one is smarter or stronger than the other, and the other basically will just collapse and die. Being unequally yoked in this context is used as a coded language for biblical ableism. So let's circle back to the idea of getting married in the Rebel Code. The Rebel Code of encouraging marriage will only work if the right kind of people get married. If the Apostle Paul were looking at the rest of the code, marrying the wrong person in an unequally yoked marriage could result in having the wrong kind of family with rebellious liberal kids, no love for straight white American Jesus, university education being brought into the house while the Bible collects dust on the shelf, and all the money that is made going to rent rather than to a house on a prairie that could be rented out as an Airbnb, and fearful Christians freaking out about the media. It's very easy for people to dismiss how harmful and even spiritually abusive this one biblical passage in 2 Corinthians can be. When people reading the Bible stop and take a look at 2 Corinthians chapter 6 verse 14, it's easy to miss what Paul truly says, and it's easy to miss how people interpret this passage. And it's very easy to forget how divisive the original translation really is. The language of being unequally yoked has been encoded into the very core of Christianity and right-leaning politics. It's been encoded to the point where the us versus them mentality is a defining feature. It's defined. It's literally right there. It is a defining, a core feature of authentic Christian populist and fascist identity. It's been encoded to the point where it's had a negative impact on both non-believers and Christian groups that just want to help bring the world together. when I realized that evangelicals had to view a social life as a zero-sum game in order to follow Jesus properly, I found myself pursuing other forms of Christianity that try to help other people or associate with other groups in society, and then, when I found out that there was no way to get out of this quote-unquote exclusive characteristic of the Christian faith, I had to say no completely to the label of being a Christian. And like I said, as an agnostic in other episodes, I still believe there is a God somewhere out there. And I deeply believe that if that God exists, he, they, or she, or whatever, wants every human being to be in some kind of unity somehow. And if the Bible claims that there needs to be division while also saying love your neighbor as yourself, something is really, really wrong with the Bible itself. And I understand the idea that not everyone's going to be able to work together, there's lots of abusive relationships that need severing, and there's boundaries that need to be put in certain relationships. If there needs to be a code that puts conformity over change, progress, inclusion, diversity, and equity, then whoever is pushing this code doesn't understand the difference between safety and conformity. And it's all because of discomfort of innocent people who just want to live normal lives. A part of having a normal life is to be loved, even though one is different. So in the next episode of Spirituality Challenged, we're going to start talking about family. We'll be talking about ideas regarding having kids, how the nuclear family relates to capitalism, and why Christians push for a certain kind of quote-unquote parenting. Thank you very much for listening. I'll be starting a new account on Mastodon for future updates, along with updating our website and possibly getting some more channels to build a pod community around. If you've got any suggestions or enjoyed this episode or have some criticism, send it to me at aarpar204@gmail.com. That's AAR for Robert, P for Peter, AR for Robert again, 204@gmail.com. Hope the episode was challenging for you today. Stay tuned for the next two episodes on the Code of Family. Stay frosty, everybody.